from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network, all over the Great Lakes State. First show of 2016. Been on the road. We apologize for not getting it on sooner. We've been down in Louisville at the ATA show, also on the road at the Ultimate Fishing Show. We're being brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, also Darton Archery, and Costa Sunglasses. And when we're on the road, we try and find new guests and try and find new things to talk about so we can bring them back to you, back to our website, wildmichiganradio.com, and to the podcast. And we have Chef Milos Tjelka here with us, a noted chef here from Michigan, originally from Prague, Czech Republic, correct? Welcome,
that
Chef.
That is correct.
How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
It's good to have you on here. And it was kind of funny, when we met you at the Ultimate Fishing Show over the weekend down in Novi, you were by a very busy booth, and you had we were introduced to you by my good friend Brian Brosdahl. And right. And Bro said, you know, you got to talk to Chef here. He's got this great cookbook. And, you know, you presented me with one of your cookbooks. And I said, you know, instead of just me talking about the cookbook, I would rather have you on, because these are your experiences. This is not only recipes, but these are your experiences as a hunter and an angler.
Correct.
Now, when you first came over here, how did you get involved in hunting and fishing?
Well, I came first to Canada, and I started hunting and fishing over there. Of course, over there, the fishing was absolutely fabulous, and some hunting also. And then I married a Canadian girl and eventually was able to immigrate to the United States. At first, I was on what they call a waiting list, and it took forever. So I first became actually a citizen in Canada before I got the visa, immigration visa, to come to the United States. And that was in 1958. We came to New Jersey at first, and then from there we came to Connecticut, and then from there eventually here to Detroit area, where I had a friend here who kind of pulled me over here.
And you've been here ever since. They kind of sucked you into Detroit, into Michigan,
right?
And you've been here, and you've got this great book called Cooking Wild Game and Fish with Chef Milos, and that's how everybody says it.
Right.
But I was looking through the book and noticed again that you have some recipes in here, and what's really nice about wild game is it's more versatile than people give it credit for. With venison steaks, so many people just cook the steak. Sometimes they're overcooked because they're so lean, or the fish is just a you know, flour, salt, and pepper mix. But there are so many more things that you can do with wild game.
Absolutely.
And in the book also, you have a processing tips here, which, you know, with so many processors out there and with time being what it is, a lot of times at a minimum, it's tough, but you still go through some great color photos as to how to process your own venison.
Right, right. The problem is with processors that people take them, the deer, when it is freshly killed, and the processor will skin it and freeze it immediately and then cut it up. When the meat is processed in this manner, it will be very tough to eat, and it will also be strong tasting. Even domestic animals, beef especially, and lamb, they are never processed immediately after the animal is killed. They are hung first for a few weeks to let the muscles relax. Otherwise, you would have very tough meat to eat. And people don't realize that. Many people, even if they do their own deer, they tend to cut it up fresh. And it's a big mistake. The deer needs to hang. It needs to age. And then you will be amazed how much difference it makes on, number one, on the tenderness of the meat and also on the flavor. You know, it seems that everybody knows about aging beef and they know about aging cheese and wine, but nobody seems to know about aging wild game. And mostly all wild game, even the small game, really should be aged to get the optimum flavor out of it and, of course, tenderness also.
Speaking with Chef Milos Telka here on Wild Michigan. Chef, when you talk about aging, and it's definitely has to be in a cooled environment, what is an optimum temperature range for aging those meats, even the small game like you mentioned?
Right. The optimum aging temperature is 40 degrees. But unless you have a walk-in refrigerator, you don't have much control over that. I hang my animals in my garage, and I, you know, they hang there up to a temperature of even 55 degrees, up to 60 degrees even, and I have no problem with that, you know. And the thing is, with large animals like deer, if the temperature gets warm, I apply what I call hot oil on them. I make that myself, and I smear that oil over all the exposed areas of the deer, and the flies stay away from it, absolutely stay away. They don't want no part of it. And the deer is protected from on the outside with a hide. I never skin them first. I always hang them with the skin on. And I've been doing this for last, I don't know, about 60 years already, you know, and never had any problem with that. And when it freezes hard, like if you harvest the deer late in the season and it gets too cold, well, then I make like a little teepee with a tarp over the deer and put a little heater underneath to keep it from freezing. And basically, I always hang my deer at least 2 weeks before I skin and butcher them.
And I'm looking in the book, too, with Chef Milos Telka here on Wild Michigan, that there is an actual, you know, section on the hot oil fly repellent that he's talking about here.
Right, right. It is very easy to make. You take 2 cups of any vegetable oil and add a small handful of crushed red pepper to it and put it on the stove. And when it starts to sizzle, you take it off, let it cool, and then you put it in a jar. And it will keep for, I have had some for 2 years, and it without refrigeration, it doesn't spoil, you know. And then I like to use like a bottle brush that I dip into it, and then I smear all the exposed areas where flies would get on with it, and you'll be amazed how they stay away. They don't want any part of that.
That's amazing, speaking with Chef Milos here on Wild Michigan. And Chef, real quickly, we've got about a minute left in the segment. When it comes to cooking wild game, one of the rules that I've been taught by a lot of different people in the industry is to never overcook it. You have to really, a medium rare to rare almost, when just even grilling or whatnot, because there's no real fat content. It's all lean muscle in there.
That is correct. We're talking about the tender muscles, you know. Most people don't realize that in the hind legs, example, there are some very, very tender muscles where you can make steaks or roasts out of it, which are just as tender as the back straps. And those definitely should be cooked no more than medium rare. Now, there are some tough muscles, and those are best suited to make stews and pot roasts out of them.
Okay. Chef Milos is joining us right here. We're going to speak more with him. The book is called Cooking Wild Game and Fish with Chef Milos on Wild Michigan.
You can join join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an hour to time, in a state 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Find us on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Got a lot of events coming up here. We're going to be at the Whitetails Unlimited Banquet coming up to the... it's going to be happening at the Radisson, downtown Lansing, February 27th. There's a link right on the front page of our website. Our good friend, Travis T-Bone Turner, will be at this Michigan Deer Camp. If you want to get your tickets, get involved, go to wildmichiganradio.com, click on the link for the Whitetails Unlimited Michigan Deer Camp, and you'll see T-Bone's picture on there. It'll take you right to the place where you can get tickets. Some other great events with Whitetails Unlimited also going on around the state this year. We're back with a chef, Milos Tjelka, right now. And chef, we're glad to have you on here. And as I mentioned to you off air, I wish I would have found you earlier in our show's history. We've been doing this for 10 years, and this is the first time we've had you on, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
No, not at all. And you've got, we talked about fish, and when we have, we're ice fishing right now, we're getting out and getting some good reports of good ice in the northern portions of the state. But there are keys to handling fish that I've noticed in your book as well. What are some of the good tips to know when handling your catch?
Well, first of all, keeping it cold, which this time of year should be no problem, you know. It's best if you try to keep them from freezing. You know, once they freeze, so the texture is a little bit different later on. But, you know, then if you can use them fresh. And gutting them out, taking the gills out. If you keep fish for any length of time, they will keep a lot longer if you gut them out and remove the gills. Actually, few people don't understand it, but the gills are probably the first thing that will spoil on the fish, okay? And, you know, there's an old saying that fish rots from the head, and it's very true, you know? And other than that, well, this time of year, there shouldn't be any problem keeping them cold, you know? Mm-hmm. In the summertime, it's important not once... if you would fillet the fish, you definitely don't want the fillets to be in contact with water because the water will leach nutrients and flavor out of the fillets. So you can keep them in ice or water, whole fish or gutted fish, that's fine. But once you fillet them, you should keep them out of water. They should be kept in plastic bags or something like that and sealed, and then you can put them in ice.
Chef, one of the things that we've done some salmon fishing in the past and enjoyed that a great deal. Something I learned when we're going to keep some of the salmon is the guys will cut the gill rakers and bleed the fish out. And I've noticed that the fillet takes on a very different color at that time.
Yes. Well, you know, commercial fishermen go different ways about keeping fish than, you know, domestic than people, just sports fishermen. And the commercial fishermen generally, they immediately gut the fish out and in most part even remove the heads and throw everything overboard on the ocean, you know. And when it comes to lake fishing, well, there are some actually commercial fish farms that when they get a fish, they will cut the gills to cause the fish to bleed and then let them swim in a tank while they are bleeding, still keeping them alive, and they really bleed out. And that makes the flesh kind of cleaner and better looking, you know.
Mm-hmm. Does it give it a different taste when you take some of the minerals that are in the blood out of there?
Well, I think it tastes milder, you know, for one thing. Salmon from our Great Lakes tastes different than salmon from the ocean. And So I guess bleeding them gives them a milder taste.
Excellent. One of the recipes, we're speaking with Chef Milos Tielka here on Wild Michigan. The book is called Cooking Wild Game and Fish with Chef Milos. You have a Bohemian fish soup on there, and I'll tell you why that intrigues me. Despite the fact my last name is Martinez, a lot of my family comes from Scotland, Czechoslovakia, and back in the day of Bohemia. So that's why this really kind of intrigued me.
Right, right. It is a soup that we traditionally served at Christmas time, you know. In Europe, carp are a very popular fish and are served in the fanciest of restaurants. But the carp, they raise them in ponds and then they put them in crates and they tie the crates in rivers. And the fish kind of purge themselves in the running water of the rivers. And the taste of a carp in Europe is very similar to our whitefish here.
Mm-hmm.
So they are very good eating. And traditionally in Austria, Germany, Czechoslovakia, probably Hungary and Poland, they serve fried carp on Christmas Eve as a traditional dish. And then they make soup out of the trimmings, out of the head and raw or milled. They make the fish soup out of it. And it's a very good tasting soup. My family loves that soup. And you can make it, of course, out of different fish here also.
It sounds really good. I mean, I know that what we see as our carp here were not native, that they were brought over for Europeans to eat, and now they're pretty much everywhere.
Right. But, for all the carp I have tried to cook here and in Canada, and I have caught carp in a pristine, clean lake with hard bottom, sand and rocks, and that fish still did not taste very good, you know. I don't know what it is, but they were very strong tasting with kind of a sour smell to them, and I couldn't eat it, you know. So I gave up on trying to eat carp over here, so we always get some different fish.
Yeah, I get that. You know, I know people that have smoked it and have canned it, and they swear by it, and I'm just not that guy, Chef.
Right, right.
But the book is quite nice, and you said also that you're on WordPress with some of the recipes that you have, some in the book and some not.
Right, right. That's correct.
And how do we find you on WordPress?
Well, you log in, and under Cooking with Milos, you would find it there.
All right, Cooking with Milos. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to put a link and a picture of this book on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Speaking with Chef Milos here on Wild Michigan. Chef, it's been an absolute treat having you on here. The show was very nice to meet you. I would actually, if you don't mind, would like to have you come back another time.
I would love to come back.
Yes. We would love to have you, because we can get a little more in-depth with some of the recipes on fowl and some of the things you have for upland game birds and the like, and the fact that you hunt and fish, that you get it, and your credentials as a chef speak volumes. So hang on, I'll talk to you off the air. We're speaking with Chef Milos here. This is Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Hagen of ClareBirchley.ie inviting you to fish County Clare, Ireland. Now back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host all over the Great Lakes State. WildMichiganRadio.com is our website. And man, oh man, oh man. Thanks to Chef Milos Tielka Now, it's what was it? Alex, our producer, who is the king of pronunciation, Miloš Ćelka is probably how it's supposed to be said, but everybody calls him Chef Milos, which is cool. Great guy. Did not realize when I met him at the show, 85, he'll be 86 this year. Amazing condition, amazing individual, and some great recipes that we, you know, we talked some technique with him earlier in the show. But again, there'll be a link to find him at our website, wildmichiganradio.com. And we talked to Mark Martin about doing a little ice fishing. We talked to Chad Stewart about CWD in Michigan. And as the pike fishing in Ireland, if you have not been following clarevirtually.ie, our friends at Black Bay Lodge in County Clare in Scariff on Lough Derg have been pulling in the monster. And I do mean monster pike out of Lough Derg over there in Ireland, where we had the opportunity to fish in May of last year. We'll be going back again to do some fishing. Not quite sure when, but we are definitely going back. And Keith Stanton joins us right now because we're talking about pike fishing and we're talking about pikespearing.com, his website. Keith, we were welcome to the show, man. It's been a little while since you've been on.
And it's good. I'm glad to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Now, we ran into you also at the Ultimate Fishing Show in Novi over the weekend. And I guess I think we talked to you a little bit about fishing Ireland, and right now the pike fishing over there on the fly is absolutely incredible. These guys are pulling in some just hogs.
That is incredible. I seen your video from when you went. It's on my bucket list. I mean, that just looks incredible. And to do it with a fly, I mean, that's a feat, man.
Yeah. Yeah. These guys are hardcore when it comes to fly fishing for pike over there. And right now, man, it's their winter, but it seems to be a big, heavy time for the pike. Now, you do a lot of pike spearing. That is what you're known for. And with this, is first ice a good time for pike, either for jigging or for spearing? Is that really a good time, or are we doing it more later in the year?
No, spring. I mean, your first ice and towards the end of the year is always my favorite time. It seems, you know, that's when we're most productive. You almost always get mid to late February through the first part of March. You almost always get that winter lull where, you know, they don't shut down completely, but, man, it does slow up quite a bit. And, you know, if you can get out there on them first few inches and feel safe enough and good enough about cutting a big hole out of the ice, usually that's when you have, you know, real good success, that first ice.
Yeah, first ice right now, like I said, we talked to Mark Martin in the last hour of the show. He set up on Lake Missaukee. They got some really good ice right now, like 6-8 inches of ice. And it's going to have one warm-up this weekend, one warm-up day, but then go back to below freezing temps and probably adding some more ice. So you've got to be, if you haven't been out already, have got to be itching to get on the ice.
Oh, I am itching bad. In fact, I'm texting with a friend just before you called. He's out on Lake St. Clair right now on 5 inches, and he said he's been set up about 15 minutes and has had one muskie and two pike through. So needless to say, I have not been out yet, but I'm meeting up with him on Saturday and going to crowd his spot and get it done, hopefully.
Now, how are you going after? You know, are you going to spear, or are you going to be jigging the pike and muskie for the first ice here?
Oh, I'll start out spearing. You know, usually I'll do my jigging a little bit later in the year. You know, spearing's kind of my first love. And so that's, you know, if I get the opportunity to go, I'll be spearing. A lot of times jigging is something where if I've only got a 2-hour window to fish, it's still better than sitting on the couch. So I'll go drill a hole, and that's usually when I'll do my jig fishing, kind of just when time permits or when it's just more ideal for me to do the jigging rather than, you know, the complete spearing setup.
Now, you have your own line of decoys and lures. You have the Pike Killa 9-inch decoy. Kind of, you know, for those of us who haven't done it yet, want to go pike spearing, kind of walk us through what the decoy does and how it's presented.
Presentation-wise, I mean, I'm just putting it down in the hole, you know, running it off of like some tip-up line, either off from the top of my shanty. I'll just tie it off. on some tip-up line, or I'll run it on what's called a jigging stick, basically just a wooden stick with no reel on it, but just kind of hold your tip-up line so that you can drop that fish down in the water and work them with your hand. And that's kind of how we present it to the fish, and I'm usually only running that decoy, even if I'm spearing in, say, 10 foot of water, I usually only have that decoy, you know, 3 to 4 feet underneath the ice. And I'm jerking it, you know, in a minute's time, I'm probably doing 8 to 10 revolutions with that decoy. The tail is bent on these decoys, so they swim in a circle. So usually, you know, I'm fairly impatient, so over a minute's time, like I said, I'm jigging it quite a bit and just making it swim in a circle. And, you know, and I'm also changing colors of my decoys fairly often, every 15 minutes or so. And just because they're a curious fish by nature, so a lot of times, they'll be sitting outside your hole, and all it takes is that color change. You drop that different color down, and they'll come flying in to look at it. Of course, you know, they don't necessarily have to bite it when you're spearfishing. All they got to do is come in to take a look.
Now, when you're presenting that decoy to the fish, and it's just a pretty much up and downward motion, and that gives it that spin around because of the angle of the tail and how you have the fins?
Yep, exactly. The fins kind of give it some lift, and then that tail is adjustable aluminum tail, so you can bend it to make it do a real tight circle, or you can straighten that tail out a little bit more, and it'll do a nice big wide gliding circle around the hole.
Now, colors is pike. Are they more along the lines to be a bright color or dark color, or and how much does water clarity have to do with that? I mean, and you probably need a good amount of water clarity to see the fish come in.
You do, and that's kind of the problem with a lot of these. You know, typically a good pike lake has stained water to begin with. It just seems like the ones where they grow big, the water is just a little bit dirtier, discolored. So, yeah, you know, you got to have some clearer water just so you can see the fish. And as far as colors, you know, they are a finicky fish. I've learned over the years, especially using that underwater camera, they're as delicate and dainty as they are vicious and ferocious. So, you know, colors, that's why I just keep trying different colors. You never know. It literally changes day to day. The guy on St. Clair today, he put 3 colors down. He said before he found red and white is what's doing it today. After he put the red and white on, he'd seen 3 fish. It's just day to day, and you just find what they like, and once you do, you stick with that presentation, and that's how we usually have our best success.
Keith Stanton joins us here on Wild Michigan. His website is pikespearing.com, and you can find that link on wildmichiganradio.com. Pick up the podcast if you miss any of this conversation. And Keith, real quickly, about a minute left in the segment, The red and white historically has been like the go-to color since the beginning of lure making for pike.
It has. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
I mean, it is still red and white and yellow, a bright chartreuse yellow-green are my 2 favorites. But, you know, I don't go on the ice without red and white. And same thing goes for my lures. The red and white is just something about that color combination, man.
You know, it's funny. You can look back to the days of Daredevil or the old Picarino or whatever you want to look. There's a red and white lure in Grandpa's tackle box, and that's probably the most beat up one in the whole thing also, because something about evolution has skipped pike with those colors. Not that I'm complaining, but it's just kind of funny how, you know, there's always these new color combinations, but you still see the red head with the white body out there making that huge impact on those fish.
Can't go wrong. Can't go wrong with red and white.
Absolutely not. Keith Stanton's our guest. We're going to speak more with him in a couple of seconds. Visit our website, please. WildMichiganRadio.com. We're going to be at Whitetails Unlimited Banquet coming up here. Also, when we come back, we'll tell you about the big, big Pheasants Forever Chapter 4-6-7 Banquet coming in March here on Wild Michigan. At the bottom of a real tall cold drink, chilling to some Skinner or some Mohawk.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. fun show today, man, talking about getting outdoors. And I know the last, it's kind of funny, the last part of the year, it was tough because, look, we had a lousy deer season and a lot of things just come up, you know, come up short of getting outdoors. You run out of things to talk about, but then you've got that first show of the season under your belt. ATA comes by. Then you got the Ultimate Fishing Show. We got shows coming up in Las Vegas next week. We'll be at the SHOT Show getting all the information from the firearm industry. Plus, we've got some banquets coming up. Ingham County Chapter of Pheasants Forever, number 467. They've got their great big banquet coming up as well. And if you would like to get tickets for that, March 11th is the banquet at the Eagle Eye Banquet Facility. Super early bird banquet packages available, and some other great stuff. And this is a lot of guns given away, a lot of great fun, a lot of great food, and lots of friends. So make sure you go to wildmichiganradio.com to check that out, and we'll have all that information. So here's what we're doing now. We're talking with Keith Stanton, pikespearing.com. Keith, when we were at the Ultimate Fishing Show, we ran into our friend Lance Valentine from Walleye 101. He was very gracious and had me on as a guest for his podcast. And we had talked about something about how the independents, the smaller companies, are being sucked up by big companies, which is not always a bad thing. But what happens is a lot of innovation is lost with some of those big companies. There's not a lot of R&D going on because all of that has been done by the initial company owner. And so now they take a product, they either license it with their own name, or they just buy up the company. And this is what bringing you in here. You're an independent guy here in Michigan, and these pike killer lures, your rigs for decoys, this is all either handmade or stuff that you do yourself.
That's correct. It's, you know, a labor of love. You know, when you're an individual doing it, you're trying to, you don't necessarily always do it for the money. You know, I do it for the kind of the love of just doing it, and, you know, keeping everything here in this state. It, you know, I could do it cheaper by outsourcing it, but you know, I'm just not comfortable doing that. I feel better about, you know, the product leaving my hands and getting to the consumer's hands, you know. And, there's a lot of that going on in the industry right now. I mean, and it's not just the fishing industry. It's the world we live in, you know. And it can be a slippery slope. And it's, it's good and bad both for the consumer. You know, you can't have your cake and eat it too, I guess, you know. So, you just keep on keeping on and hope for the best. It's just kind of the world we live in.
Yeah, it is. And again, I wanted to preface that whole thing by saying it's not always a bad thing, because there are great products on the market that normally wouldn't get to a mass audience, that we've been using for years on a local level, but never got to that mass audience to purchase for themselves and to see, because sharing all this information and technology, be it the most primitive to the most advanced, is very important, because it helps get more people outdoors. It helps people enjoy their time outdoors more, and with the enjoyment comes success.
I couldn't agree with that more. You're exactly right. There's good and bad for everything, you know. I mean, it's you just keep on fishing. That's the main thing.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we talked a little bit about some techniques for decoys, but now with these pike killer lures that you have on your website, pikespearing.com, you say that this is more, the jigging technique comes a little bit more towards the end of the pike fishing season.
I always like to do it, the end of season, and a lot of that could be back, you know, 4 or 5 years ago before the laws were changed. Actually, spearing season ended, I believe it was March 1st, but pike season didn't end until March 15th, so that's kind of how I got into it. I was, not ready to be done fishing, so over the last 15 days, I would go out and just jig fish, because that's kind of all you could do for the pike at that point, and that's kind of how I got hooked. So, you know, it's not that it isn't, valuable or good to do it all year. Not that you won't have success. It's just that's kind of how I started, and so that's just kind of how I do it every year, you know?
No, absolutely. And of course, with spearing, I want to go back to that a little bit, because when you're cutting a hole in the ice, I mean, look, you first have to know your ice is safe, not only in one hole spot, but in the area you'll be fishing. That's got to be something you look at, you know, as a priority before you even get started.
Oh, for sure, for sure. You know, you drill that first hole, and you know, I've got the camera, so I'm able to pop that down there and take a look around and see what we're dealing with. But if you don't have a camera, I mean, drill that starter hole, look down there and see. You know, you don't want to be in that 2 foot of water, so when you cut that big hole, you know, there's no room for spearing. You know, so yeah, definitely you always take a look down that starter hole first, and of course, you know, make sure that ice is safe for sure. If I'm on 4 to 5 inches ice, I feel pretty good about making a big hole.
Now, when you're spearing, you're using, you know, like the hub style shack. Does that interfere with the spear at all? Because I've seen, you go to the antique store, you see this like pole that's like 15 feet long. It's like, what is that guy spearing? Moby Dick? You know, like, you know, how deep are you spearing? But, you know, maybe there's something I don't know about.
No, I mean, of course, you're sitting down in that hub, and usually I've got the, you know, the spear kind of laying, not across my lap, but positioned in a way so that it's, you know, so it's not hitting the roof of the shack. But you get into those bigger, you know, like Chappelle makes a 6,500, they call it. You got about 6 foot of headroom, so you're good. In the smaller shacks, you know, even if you have to, you can leave your spear in the water a little bit just to make it work. You know, the main thing I tell guys is just get out there and do it. You know what I mean? If that's your only holdup, you know, you don't belong out there anyway, I guess. You know what I mean? It's just the convenience of those portable shanties is outweighs, you know, the downside to any of those small problems you might run into. So I tell guys, just go for it. Make it work, you know.
How much practice is needed? Here's the next thing, because I know there's a refraction. It's like when you put a stick in the water, you see it looks bent. You have this angle of refraction that comes with putting something in the water, the visibility. So I kind of know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Are you getting ready to spear behind your target or in front of your target? How does that refraction work? And roughly, is there a science to the angle?
You know, there really isn't. You know, good question. I've never actually really thought about it. I just kind of put the spear in the water and go. You know, it's just a natural instinct. But that's one of the reasons why I'm only running that decoy 2 to 4 feet underneath the ice, so that they're closer to me, so I got less chance to miss. But the spear is pretty heavy. I'm aiming, you know, between the eyeballs and the gills, so I'm aim small, miss small kind of thing. And I'm just thrusting that spear straight down. I don't really take into account refraction or anything. It's just when you're doing it, it's just more of a natural thing, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was something, you know. Now here's what happens. I just messed you up for your next time out, because now you're going to think about this. All the time that you've done it, you've never had to think, and all of a sudden now he's going to think.
No, I will be. You know, the fish are close, like I said. I like to keep them just under the ice for that reason. We don't miss many fish, but we do miss them even that close. You know, it's so much like bow hunting where 8 yards. How did I shoot over its back, or how did I shoot under it? It was right there. You know, it's same principles apply. It's more challenging than what the newcomer might think it is.
Yeah, I can imagine, because my mind already, I'm not even on the ice, and I'm thinking refraction, I'm thinking angle, I'm like, okay, where do I need to put this? And, you know, I'm probably going to overthink a lot of things, but, you know, as we have talked about for I don't know how many years now, and this isn't just you, this is the same thing with anybody else we have on the show, that we talk about getting out and doing things together, and next thing you know, the year's gone, because we get so tied up. But it's something I definitely want to try. And if you want to try it yourself, you want to find out more, Keith has got all kinds of lures and DVDs, good instructional DVDs that you have produced yourself on your website at pikespearing.com.
Yes, sir. We have 4 DVDs. The number 4 is strictly a how-to DVD. So it kind of just runs you through how I do everything, from finding the location to, you know, how to throw that spear, kind of like what we were just talking about. And it does also touch on the jig fishing that I do. And tip-ups are also a big part of the pike world, you know, in the winter. So Pike Under Ice 4 kind of covers the gamut. If you were looking to get started, that would be a good one for you.
All right, man. Check him out. PikeSpearing.com. Keith Stanton, thank you so much. Thanks to Chef Milos. Thanks to Chad Stewart of the Michigan DNR and pro angler Mark Martin, all joining us here. Find us on the website, wildmichiganradio.com. Guaranteed, the podcast is there. Thank you all so much for joining us. SHOT Show next week, Las Vegas. We'll be back. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.